There's our theme, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Unfortunately, Dravida couldn't be with us. Most of you probably know that there was a plan, and then Krishna had another plan, and Krishna's plan prevailed. He didn't get the Arctic cold, but he, you know, in San Diego, he got some kind of a flu and lost his voice. Wasn't a good idea for him to travel, so he had to cancel. But when he heard this topic, he was like, "Well, that's the essence of Krishna consciousness. So much to say on that topic." So we'll have to figure out a way to get Dravida here sometime when he doesn't have a cold and a voice that's gone. We'll figure something out. So the main message woven again and again is from our side that we should remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. However, bhakti is a relationship. And some of the favorite portions of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, and then the commentary of our acharyas, is those sections where Krishna discloses what he feels, or how Krishna reciprocates with the devotee. Some people are puzzled about the existence of God. Some people aren't puzzled and they have all kinds of different ideas about the existence of God. And that God is a person, monotheistic religion accepts that God is a person. But when you start getting particular, like his form, I've heard it. No. He can't look like that. Why he can't look like that? Well, he just can't look like that. That's why he can't look like that. And God as a person is notional for many. Because when you start getting specific about qualities, form, activities, exchanges of love with his eternal associates in the spiritual world, it's hard for people to go the rest of the distance besides even those that say that God is a person. There's a reason for that, and the reason for that is the dvesha, or the regard for the Supreme Lord as a person, and we're competitors. Anyway, he's a person, and he reciprocates. He reciprocates exactly according to how we have regard for him. So for the devotee that's always remembering Krishna, never forgetting Krishna, Krishna always remembers his devotee. And we're sadhakas. We're not perfected souls by any means. But in the process of sadhana bhakti, the practice of devotion, it's enlivening. It's important to recognize there's reciprocation on the other side as we extend ourselves to Krishna. So this morning we're going to be discussing a few, starting with one really prominent message from Srimad Bhagavatam related to Maharaj Ambarish and the Supreme Lord Narayana or Vishnu. Now, Maharaj Ambarish is a pure devotee. He's a Krishna bhakta. Specifically, he worshipped a Krishna deity. But you can worship Krishna in different moods, and his mood was more like the resident of Vaikuntha. He's like Vaikuntha Basi. He had enormous, equal to the opulence of Vaikuntha, opulence, beyond the opulence of heaven on earth, and was totally detached. He totally engaged everything in Krishna's service, including his temple and his deity worship and his lifestyle, you could say, but totally detached from the sense of being the enjoyer of that opulence. It was all for Krishna. In that sense, detached. Everything's for Krishna. And one of the things that he did, there's many things to say, but one of the things that he did was he was wishing the welfare of his citizens. Just like a parent wishes the welfare of their children. The king sees all living entities, not even just human beings, but all living entities. Anyone that's born in his kingdom is like his child. He had that affection. And so he decided to undergo an austerity, a vrata, a vow of very strict observance of Ekadasi for 1 year, an Ekadasi vrata. And doesn't give the detail of what that vrata was, but on the final day of the final year, or final Ekadasi during that year, it was the grand culmination of the benefit, because the benefit was to go to his citizens. That was important. He would accrue pious credit for that difficult Ekadasi Vrata. And his wish was, my citizens should receive this benefit. So their well-being, their prosperity, their needs, everything should go to them. That was his mindset. Then on the final day, the final, just like the other day, we broke Ekadasi between, you know, within a window of 12 minutes or whatever it was. It's important that you break Ekadasi on the second day, the Dwadasi day, within the window of time. And it varies according to the lunar movements and so on. So on this final day of his Ekadasi Vrata, he had worshipped his deity. It was time to break the fast. And lo and behold, a very elevated, exalted brahmana came into the assembly. Durvasa Muni, very, very powerful brahmana. Marjambarish was ecstatic. How fortunate. When a brahmana comes to grace an occasion like this, all good fortune will come. Please, Durvasa Muni, do the honor of breaking fast first. Sure. You've properly respected me. You're a qualified king. But I've been traveling and I can't break the fast until I take my morning bath and say Gayatri and meditate on the impersonal Brahman, which can take a long time. So we went with his 60,000 followers, and tick, 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 tick. Time was passing, and the time to break the fast was about to lapse. So he needed to break the fast to get the merit that goes to his citizens. But he didn't want to dishonor, disrespect Durvasa Muni. You don't do that. You have a big problem. So, what to do, what to do, what to do? He consulted the brahmana group and his ministers and what to do. The Brahmanas can be very clever. They said, we have a way that you can break the fast and not break the fast at the same time. It's a cool procedure. You just put a few drops of the charanamrita from the bathing of your deity this morning in the palm of your hand and sip it. And that way you've broken the fast, but you did break the fast. So following the brahmana advice that he received, he broke the fast that way. Meanwhile, Durvasa Muni, still meditating, chanting and doing his morning ablutions, and he had the capacity to know that Maharishi Ambarish had broken the fast before him. He invited him to break the fast first, which was proper. So he came back in a very angry mood. And the commentary says a big part of his anger was due to pride. You know, that terrible thing called pride. So, because he was so elevated, he was envious that Maharaj Ambarish is honored more than me. I'm a brahmana. He's a kshatriya. So everyone should honor me more than they honor him, and I'm this powerful personality. But they honor him so much, too much. So I'll cut him down to size. That was, doesn't say exactly like that, but that was his mood. So when he came back, he challenged Maharishi Ambarish. You broke fast. And for this offense, you deserve to be killed. And so he had powers. He snatched a little piece of hair with a mantra, dashed the hair to the ground, and created a fiery demon. There's the fiery demon. And he pointed towards Maharaj Ambarish, said, kill him. Well, here's another painting of, there's no fiery demon, it's a lady with a chopper in her hand. And there's the bunch of hair that is still in his hand, but he threw it to the ground instead. He's got his special shoes over here. And then what happened was, the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, who is the protector of his devotee, his surrendered devotee, his Sudarshan Chakra, it's described a little bit earlier in this section, that Lord Vishnu provided Maharaj Ambarish, he was so dear to him, an expansion of his Sudarshan. Say, just stay by the side of Maharaj Ambarish always, and if any difficulty comes, you know what to do. So Sudarshan then was activated because Maharaj Ambarish was in difficulty and the fiery demon got chopped by the power of Sudarshan. And once a demon is released, if it doesn't do the job, then it goes back to the person who released the demon. So Sudarshan started pursuing Maharaj Ambarish. And Maharaj Ambarish panicked. He fled for his life. And he went here and there and throughout the universe and went to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and pleaded with them. And for, please help me. The Sudarshan Chakra is pursuing me and it's very hot and help. And they said, we're devotees of Vishnu, and it's his Sudarshan Chakra, and so you have to go to Vishnu. So he went all the way to Swetadweep, the Vaikuntha planet that's within each universe, and fell at the feet of Lord Vishnu, apologizing profusely. I had no understanding of the greatness of this devotee of yours, Durvasa Muni, so exalted. I'm fully repentant, and not only that, could you do something about your Sudarshan Chakra? Otherwise, I'm finished. Ow. And so, Lord Vishnu spoke. And that's what we're going to be discussing this morning. The words, at least one of the verses. I'm going to read the verses. They're very beautiful. And then we'll chant together one of them. So, the location is the spiritual world. At least the spiritual planet within this creation. The planet where Lord Vishnu resides, Sweta Dweep. And Lord Vishnu is speaking. It starts with 63, that we're in Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text 63. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahmana, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires. I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me. We'll come back to this with what's the meaning that I sit in the core of their hearts? We'll return to that. And Lord Vishnu is the only entity, the personality of God is the only entity who is fully independent. All others are dependent on the fully independent. But here he's saying, I'm dependent upon my devotee. So what does that mean? Is he contradicting truth? He's speaking a lie? He's expressing something that we talked a little bit about while we've been together, about free will. Or he has unlimited free will. He has independent, no restriction free will. Living entities are part and parcel. We have tiny free will and dependent. We can will to be rich or will to be something. Will to replace President Trump. Or, you know, you can will something. But your willing doesn't result in something happening because we're dependent. But Krishna is independent. He can just will something and it happens. He doesn't have to do anything. He's fully independent. And with that full independence, he chooses, this is our message this morning, he chooses to place himself in this dependent position. It's his free will choice to do so. He could withdraw it, but it's his free will choice to do so. He's fully dependent upon his devotee. And he gives the reason why. They have no material desire, which means they have only one desire. That they're just in Krishna's shelter and they have no other shelter. Krishna is everything to them. And there's nothing else that is, they may accept something if Krishna wants them to accept something. And the accepting of something can be hardship or can be whatever Krishna wants. Arctic cold, it can be whatever Krishna wants. They only want one thing. And for such a person, Krishna situates himself in their heart. We'll cover this again. Text 64. O best of the brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Very interesting statement. I don't desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss. I mean, bliss is enjoyment. I don't desire to be the enjoyer of my enjoyment, meaning superlative and beyond that enjoyment is the love of his devotees. And reciprocating with the love, that's his happiness. It's something very similar to the description when Prahlad Maharaj comes before Lord Nrisimhadev, ordered to do so by the demigods headed by Lord Brahmani. Very humbly and meekly comes before Lord Nrisimhadev, falls at his feet. Lord Nrisimhadev picks him up and places his head upon Prahlad's head. And the verse says, and he's feeling totally ecstatic. Now, same as the theme I spoke at the very beginning. We think about devotional service as what happens from our side. You know, the bhava stage and the prema stage of bhakti, something that we experience. But what does Krishna experience? Lord Nrisimhadev is experiencing ecstasy. And that's why the devotee feels ecstasy, because the Lord feels ecstasy. Just like this term, rasa. Many, if some of you are new, you don't know the term. Rasa is, every living entity has a particular rasa, a relationship with Krishna. And that relationship is neutrality, servitude, friendship, parental affection, conjugal love, bhakti rasa. But that's what we feel. But actually, rasa is, according to the Vedas, that's the absolute truth is rasa. Raso vai saha is the statement. Saha. The absolute truth that is rasa. So what we experience is part of a tiny fragmental part of the ocean of rasa, that is Krishna. So when we experience some bliss, it's bliss is being experienced by the personality of Godhead. That's why we're experiencing bliss. A major paradigm of material consciousness. Sweta was asking this question yesterday. We're at the center. You know, rasa is about me, and bliss is about me, and devotional service is about me, although I'm remembering Krishna. But what's Krishna remembering? What's Krishna feeling? What's the happiness that Krishna is feeling? So he's saying right here, I don't wish to experience, I do not wish to desire my transcendental bliss without the devotees. No, thank you. Such pure devotees, then it speaks more detail about their detachment from being the enjoyer of material facilities, stuff, vastu. Since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me without any desire for material improvement in this life or the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? Now, it's not that he's speaking about the devotees in general, but specifically it's Maharaj Ambarish. Maharaj Ambarish didn't go to the forest and give up his riches and give up his wife and give up his everything. He was totally detached from it all because of his total absorption, starting with the mind. The mind is the instrument that does the remembering. And a verse that Prabhupada loved to quote, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo. What Maharaj Ambarish's outstanding quality was, he fixed his mind always on Krishna. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo. And then his other limbs, his senses, were engaged in service to Krishna also. His hands in cleansing the temple, his legs in walking to the temple, his eyes in seeing the form of the deity, his ears in hearing glorification of the Lord. He engaged all of his senses, starting with the mind, because the mind is the king of the senses. If the mind goes in the gutter, then the senses will follow. So his mind was absorbed in Krishna, and in that sense, he gave up attachment to all these things. He stayed as a king. It's a core message of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, stay in your position. Or Lord Brahma, stane stata shruti katam tanavan mano bir. Stay in your position, but always think of Krishna. Now, when we stay in our position, the tendency is we think about our position. You know, the stuff that's around us and what's mine and what I don't have mine yet, and I make a plan to get something that's not mine is mine and protect what's mine from enemies and, you know, the whole material program. But the standard that Lord Vishnu is speaking about is a different one. The giving up of things is not the artificial renunciation, the giving up the sense of being the enjoyer of those things. But those things may still remain in your purview or at your disposal for service to Krishna. Text 67. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation. And the four principles of liberation are the four types of salokya, sarupya, samipya, sharsti, the Vaishnava liberation. They're not interested, although these are automatically achieved by their service. Have you ever wondered? I've wondered. When it says that devotees don't care for liberation, even if offered, this is a scriptural reference for it. What does it mean? They already have it. They're not doing something to get it. They already have it, but they're not interested in having it. It's just a byproduct of their devotion. They're interested in one thing, devotion. Like Mahaprabhu's teaching, Mama Jamini Jamini Shri Bhavatad Bhakti Rahaitaki Twaye. In the beginning stage of bhakti, that's us, it's good. It's recommended. We covered it in the course of our discussions. It's good to desire to be with Krishna. It's good. It's recommended. When one becomes very elevated and attached to Krishna, then Mahaprabhu's position, you can do with me whatever you like. That's a very high aspiration that we're hopefully one day will come to, that genuine and not, you know, cosmetic. But it's good to want to be with Krishna and leave behind the contaminations of this world and become purified in Krishna's association. The higher stages, Krishna's association is available wherever you are. So now, all of that was a warm-up for the verse that we're going to recite and discuss a little bit. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We just chanted twice. Sadavo Hridayam Mayam. Sadhunam Hridayam Tvaham. Mad anyate na jananti. naham tebyo managapi. Sadhavordayam mayam. Sadhunam ridayam tvaham. Mad anyate na janati. Naham tebyo managapi. I think we'll skip the word for word. Here's the word for word. And we'll just go to the translation. The pure devotee, this is Vishnu speaking to Durvasa. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. And I'm always in the core of the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. So, there's a long purport, just read part of it. Since Durvasa Muni wanted to chastise Maharaj Ambarish, it is to be understood that he wanted to give pain to the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the Lord says, Sadavo Hridayam Mayam. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. The Lord's feelings are like those of a father who feels pain when his child is in pain. Therefore, offense at the lotus feet of a devotee, offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee are serious. So it goes on describing the nature of Vaishnava offense, and Vaishnava offense is a big problem because the Lord takes exception. Even if the devotee is not troubled, the Lord is, because of the offense to the devotee. His heart is troubled. So, here's these two phrases. Sadavo hridayam mayam. That's the mayam. He's within the sadhu is in his heart. The second one is within the heart of the sadhu, I'm there. Let's discuss that a little bit. Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. There's this very special tree that's been here since I've been here, over in the temple room. And he's a very special soul, because he attends all the aartis and kirtans all the time. He doesn't go anywhere. Very patient, very benedicted. Who knows what that living entity is going to be in his next life? Who knows? So, and Krishna is in the heart of that living entity. And outside there's another, anyway, so within the heart of every living entity, Krishna is already there. So what is the meaning that Krishna is in the heart of his devotee? Because he's in the heart of everyone. And we covered it a little bit yesterday, so just repeat it. One can feel the presence of Krishna, or one can see Krishna. Remember one time a reporter asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, have you seen God? And Prabhupada said, would you believe me if I told you? And the porter said, yes, Swamiji. He said, not only I have seen God, but I'm seeing him all the time. Now, do you believe me? The porter didn't know what to say. Oh. Then comes the question, what does it mean to see Krishna all the time? And there's different explanations. I won't do them all right now. But it's what we heard is when there's bhakti, it's not just a matter of acknowledging, but one can see him. Just like, for example, when seeing the deity, the prohibition is don't see the deity as wood or stone or metal. I remember this very clearly, Prabhupada, when Radha Shyama Sundar were installed in Vrindavan. Prabhupada did the arti for Krishna Balaram. The whole event was just from another world. You could feel being transported to the other world or vice versa. The other world came to where we were. It was otherworldly experience. I mean, amazing. Waves, let's just elaborate a little bit. Waves of ecstasy were filling the temple room. You could get a knife and cut it. It was so thick. Each time Prabhupada offered an article to Krishna Balaram, then he turned. This whole wave of ecstatic energy came wafting into the temple room, and Prabhupada was radiant. It was amazing. He wanted so much to have that temple for Krishna. Read in Lilamrita. He was fixed on completing the temple. So many details. And when it was completed, he was so happy. And the installation of the deities, he was so happy. And then he gave the class after the arti. Vividly remember one portion of the class where Prabhupada said, everybody knows that these deities were carved in Jaipur. I didn't know that till he said it. And you look at the deity and it's marble deity. But the deity is not a marble deity. It was like a contradiction. The words that he spoke, these aren't verbatim what he said, but when the deity becomes installed, then the Krishna is there. And so one should see the deity, the Krishna is there. And we're dressing him and bathing him and decorating him and offering to him, and he's a person. Same message as I'm trying to present this morning. When we're striving to think of Krishna, Krishna thinks of us. We don't have to try to get Krishna to think of us. He's loving. And proportionate to our thinking of him, he'll reciprocate. This is our ticket to Goloka. The same with the holy name. It's not music or, you know, a meditation. It's Krishna. The name and Krishna are the same. We don't have that realization because we're covered. But that's the reality. And somehow we've been given this access to Krishna through chanting, through his deity worship, through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the association of devotees, through having places of worship and temples and twice. Once when we were in Brooklyn, once again in Manhattan, I heard Prabhupada say the same thing. This temple is not in Brooklyn. It's in Vaikuntha. Eyes got very big. Then he said the same, this temple is not in Manhattan. It is in Vaikuntha. And he meant it. Now, you have to be in Vaikuntha consciousness to know that you're in Vaikuntha. But the facility of accessing Vaikuntha or Goloka, because the deity was Radha Govinda, so Goloka, the spiritual world. Krishna is inviting us, and he wants to see us come to him. So that's this second one, Satunam Vridayam Tvaham. I'm in the heart of the devotee. That means the devotee is conscious that Krishna is situated there. He's situated in the heart of everyone. But one can be conscious of Krishna being situated within the heart and even before your eyes, depending upon the quality of love. Little review, quickly. Yesterday, on the same theme, we heard this verse from the 8th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain. Prabhupada writes in the purport, a pure devotee cannot forget the Supreme Lord for a moment, and similarly the Supreme Lord cannot forget his pure devotee for a moment. Well, he can do whatever he wants, but he doesn't. He can't because of his quality of love. When we are engaged in always remembering Krishna, Krishna is engaged in always remembering us at every moment. Although we're tiny, insignificant little specks. We heard yesterday, here's now the image for this message of Vasu Mana, Vasu Mana, Vasu meaning grandfather Bhishma, who was one of the Vasus that came. There's a detail of how that happened, and so he's Vasu. And Krishna is Vasu Mana. Just review. Baladeva Vidyabhusan explains the meaning is Krishna was absorbed in thought of Bhishma because Bhishma was absorbed in thought of him. He's a person, he's a loving person. So those who are absorbed in remembering Krishna, Krishna is absorbed in remembering the devotee. Another little review, we saw this nice image of Krishna protecting Draupadi. Here's a little detail that connects with our discussion this morning. After Draupadi was rescued, later, Draupadi asked Krishna, why did you take so long to rescue me? That was so difficult. And Krishna said, well, I don't interfere with your free will. Yes, you're my devotee, but you are taking other shelters. You are taking shelter of your own strength. She was trying with one hand to hold on to her sari. Dushasana was stronger. She turned to the Pandavas. They didn't do anything. She turned to Bhishma and Dronacharya. Do something. Stop this. They did nothing. Only when you turn to me with full devotion, undivided devotion, oh, then I came. She's depending upon me. Her mind is absorbed in thoughts of me, taking full shelter of me. Then I came. Get the message. We're devotees. And we're with one foot in two boats, trying to cross the ocean or the river of material existence. Not a very advisable position to be in. So with both hands thrown in the air, hey Krishna, hey Govinda. Now, he may not perform this mystic activity in our lives when we just throw our hands in the air and say, hey Krishna, hey Govinda. Even, you know, with all sincerity. It's his prerogative, but he won't not think of us. He will think of us. It's just his nature. It's just his nature. Finally, there's a nice little description in Brihat Bhagavatamrita of Gopakumar. And it's long, two volumes long. But in the concluding section, Gopakumar makes it. He makes it to Goloka Vrindavan. And when he makes it to Goloka Vrindavan, he doesn't know where he is. He's looking around and, where am I? And he goes to ask people, what is this place and who's in charge of this place? No one will even talk to him. He goes, well, the people here are really rude. They won't even talk to me. And then finally he finds this old lady that answers his question. He said, this is Goloka. And the person in charge here is Krishna. And the reason people aren't answering you is they're in such a mood of pain, of separation, they can't speak. But look, over in the distance, there's, you see that cloud? That's the dust raised by the hooves of the cows as they're coming back. Maharaj, Nanda Maharaja's 900,000 cows and Krishna, all the coward boys, they're coming back. And you see the streams of people running from Vrindavan to go greet Krishna. Go quickly. You'll meet the person who is in charge here. So Gopakumar starts running. Little boys, he can't run too fast. And running and running and running. And the description is so beautiful. He starts to see not just the cloud of dust, but the cows, so many cows. Then he starts to see the cowherd boys. And he sees Krishna. And he calls out loudly, Gopal! Because his mantra is the Gopal mantra. Madan Gopal. Madan Gopal! And he reaches his arms out to embrace Krishna. When he reaches Krishna, and Krishna sees Madan, sees Gopakumar, and Krishna starts running towards Gopakumar. And before they meet, they faint in ecstasy. And Balaram comes and chastises, when he comes to external consciousness, Gopakumar, look what you did. You've caused a disturbance for Krishna. Shame on you. Bad boy. And then Krishna comes to external consciousness. And he stands and he warmly embraces Gopakumar. That's the image here. And Krishna then says, I've been waiting for you for so long. Many, many lifetimes in past, and I was thinking, maybe in this lifetime he'll come back. But you didn't come back. And then in the next lifetime, maybe he'll come back. But you didn't come back. Finally, I went myself, became your spiritual master, that Jana Sharma that gave him the mantra. Krishna said, that was me. But now you're back. So never leave again. Please never leave again. Gopakumar is weeping and weeping. I'll never leave again. I'll never leave again. That's Krishna. On the mind of Krishna is his loving devotee. And it's proportionate. If we want to ignore Krishna, he won't interfere with that. He doesn't want it. Not the will of Krishna to ignore living entities. But if living entities ignore him, or Prabhupada's words, 10%, Krishna will give himself to you, 10%. 50%, 50% Krishna will give himself to you. 90%, 90%. Proportionate. So this always remember Krishna is also, you would say, in degrees. There's the unsteady and there's steady bhakti. And from that nishtha bhakti comes further and further and further, thickening of the sweet rice from ruchi and asakti and bhava and prema. And we talk about these things, but this is Krishna's nature. He's inviting us. Please come to me. That's his will. Please come to me. And according to our reciprocation with that appeal to always think of him in the form standing before Arjuna, and you'll come to me, you'll abide with me for sure, those verses we heard yesterday. But it's not just what happens to us, it happens from Krishna's side. He'll think of us We're not alone in this journey. Not at all. That's the message for this morning. We strive, and it's not just something from our side. There's something from Krishna's side. And as Lord Vishnu says to Durvasa Muni, I don't have any independence. You want me to take away this Sudarshan chakra? You're going to have to go ask Ambarish Maharaj. And if he says yes, it's done. Because I'm not independent. It's my Sudarshan chakra, but I place myself fully dependent upon whatever he wants. Because he has no material desire. He only wants what I want. And now I only want what he wants. That's the nature of love. Nice meditation, yes? We're pretty much deeply sunk in selfish consciousness. And the condition of love is consciousness of the beloved. And the consciousness of the beloved is he's always thinking of his devotee. It is natural. And to the degree that we place ourselves in his care, he places himself fully at our disposal. It's not a, you know, that's a nice calculation. I'll just submit myself to Krishna and then he's at my disposal. It's not like that. He's controlled by love, not by business. Okay, so any discussion on this topic?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, we have heard that like God helps those who help themselves.
Can somebody close the door? Some noise out there. Go ahead.
We have heard the statement like God helps those who help themselves.
We have which one?
Like God helps those who help themselves.
Yes.
In case of Draupadi, like she is trying to help herself and Krishna is expecting the full surrender, like leaving both hands. So where can we draw the line about doing the best and over endeavor?
I heard you changed the course of your question. I heard this question asked of Prabhupada. It was a brilliant answer. You know, it sounds like a contradiction. God helps those who help themselves, and God helps those who are fully dependent upon him, which sounds like you don't help yourself if you're just fully dependent upon him. But when you're, so Prabhupada's answer was, it's not a contradiction. He went the other way, that doing something is part of what depending upon Krishna is. He went the other way. The real help yourself is become fully dependent upon Krishna. God helps those who help themselves. Now, to be fully dependent on Krishna, we'll go back the other way. It doesn't mean you do nothing. Now, specifically in the case of Maharaj Ambarish, he did nothing. Correct?
Yes. Yes.
The fiery demon was coming. The verse says, his body didn't move and his mind didn't move. Now imagine, something is rushing at you. Just, you know, even, you know, throw something at you. You don't have to think. You just, it's just reflex. Yes. He's a kshatriya, but his arms didn't go up and his mind didn't move.
So here, like, helping ourselves.
But that's him. That's him. And what about us? What about us? Well, you know, your question specifically, the punchline was, where's over-endeavor? God helps those who help themselves. The language that Prabhupada uses in this regard is, where it's a reasonable effort, but not unreasonable effort. So, you know, where's the line? It depends on your capacity. Let's take, for example, our founder Acharya's intent to build the Vrindavan temple. You read in Lilamrita, but you speak to the people, hear the memories. He was pushing and pushing. Right? And, you know, the Juhu temple, you know, over the top. That was his inspiration. He knew it was meant to be. We don't have that capacity. But he, if you're a materialist or not a faithful devotee, you might look at what he did was more than necessary. For us, your question is, where do you draw the line between endeavor that's over-endeavor? That's your question. You make a reasonable effort. Or, you know, using an American expression, you give it the old college try. You've heard that one before? Not heard that one before? You make a sincere effort. But not where, to the extent where you've compromised sadhana, you've compromised relationships, you've compromised the core of your Krishna consciousness, which is you lose sight that it's for Krishna's pleasure, and it becomes an attachment to achieving the result instead of for Krishna's pleasure. Krishna disappears from the picture.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
And that's different for different people, and even different circumstances for the same person. But those are some considerations. And when in doubt, ask an advanced devotee that you have trust in, and ask, and you'll describe the situation and help take some input from that person. I feel like reaching the edge, the line, and can you help me with, you know, have I crossed the line with an appropriate endeavor or too much endeavor? Okay. Over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was just wondering, because in Christianity, I was taught to see it like this, like God even knows how many hairs is on your head, right? God is all-knowing.
God is all-knowing, yes.
Yeah, he knows how many hairs you even have on
everyone's
head. I don't
know if he knows
head.
How many hairs.
Okay, so so I wanted to understand why Krishna was wondering when his, I forgot the name of this guy, when he was gonna come back to Goloka. Like, doesn't he know everything? Doesn't he know what we're gonna do when we're gonna come back? Doesn't he know everything?
Yes.
So why did he say, oh, I was wondering when you were going to come back this
life? I understand
life
the question.
Or,
I understand the question. It's love. Otherwise it's, you know, pretty dry and boring, but it's not dry and boring, it's love. So he's appealing, but he doesn't interfere with our free will, because free will is in our hand. So if he knows already, like say, you or me or any one of us, you know, how many lifetimes or how many ticks of the second hand will it be before we reach Goloka again, doesn't mean that he's not feeling a feeling of wishing for us to come to him. But it doesn't negate, it's a loving message. It doesn't negate his omniscience. It's a loving message.
Thank you.
Yeah?
It's good. I was trained so literal, you know, that...
I understand the question.
Yeah.
It doesn't negate his omniscience to say that in expression of love to Gopa Kumar, I was wanting you to come back. Mm-hmm. I was hoping, maybe in this, so it doesn't negate the loving mood, mm-hmm. his omniscience.
How would you suggest what would you suggest me to do to understand Krishna as a person more? Because I feel like
that's
I understand him more literal as like a machine or something. Because
well, he's an all-knowing. He may exhibit. He may even forget himself. There's passages in the 10th canto. Krishna forgets himself. It's his own yogamaya potency for his own enjoyment, and his yogamaya potency covers himself and then is withdrawn. I mean, how do you understand that? But it's his pleasure. It's his happiness. And it facilitates his happiness. And so yogamaya, knowing the happiness of the master of yogamaya, causes Krishna to forget himself. He forgets his omniscience. He enjoys that. Queen Kunti, in her prayers, she marvels at the love of Mother Jasoda, because her rasa is parental affection. Mm-hmm. Queen Kunti, she's Krishna's father's sister. So Krishna treats Queen Kunti like mother. That's the relationship.
Yeah.
So she sees him as super soul, a perambulatory super soul. That's how she sees him. So it's painful for her when Krishna comes and touches her feet and offers words of respect and praise, because he's super soul. Oh. But the love of Mother Jasoda, it's just out of sight. Because Mother Jasoda doesn't see Krishna that way. And how does Krishna see Mother Jasoda? He's afraid of a little stick in the hand of Mother Jasoda, and he cries. Mm-hmm. Now, if he was just he's omniscient. Back to your question. Mm-hmm. He's omniscient. He knows he's the Supreme Controller. He doesn't not know he's the Supreme Controller. But he enjoys being controlled by Mother Jasoda. And so he cries. Now, Queen Kunti, if it's just the rational side, oh, I get it. He's just play acting. Mm-hmm. She thinks she's my mother, so I'm going to behave like I'm her little boy, and I'll cry. That would be easy, play acting. But no, he was afraid of a little stick in Mother Soda's hands. And he's the Supreme Controller. Now, is he omniscient or not? He's omniscient. But he's a loving person that for experiencing happiness that's of the spiritual dimension, Yogamaya covers him and he forgets that he's the omniscient Supreme Controller. And he's controlled by the love of Mother Jasoda. He was the controller is controlled. He's filled with contradictions. He's omniscient, forgets himself. Everything's got to be within him. Otherwise, yeah. Something missing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, thank you for that. You helped me understand a little bit more, but it's
it's
still
inconceivable.
Very difficult
to understand the inconceivable is not, our binary processor can't hold it. But at least in principle, within him is everything. Fear of Mother Jasoda. He who is the controller of everyone. She says, he who is feared by fear personified is afraid of a little stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. It's a little stick. Not like a big club.
Yeah.
Afraid. He's feeling fear. And cries. It's part of his ecstasy. The ecstasy is unlimited. There's no limit. He's not limited by his omniscience. Mm-hmm. How many hairs on the head?
That was just something I was taught, you know, and
okay.
I always thought this way, like even God knows everything. He knows what I'm thinking. He knows what I'm going to do today, tomorrow, everything. Like, everything is kind of like fate in a sense, because destiny. He just knows everything. That's kind of how I took that all knowledgeable.
Okay, but then let's go further. He can know everything and he can forget everything. He's feared by fear personified, and he's afraid of Mother Yasoda's, the stick in Mother Yasoda's hand. Within him is everything. And it's part of the loveliness, the beauty, the attractiveness of the all attractive. Especially in the relationship with his devotees in Vrindavan. He doesn't do that in Vaikuntha. There's no Mother Yasoda. There's no stick in Mother Yasoda's hand. There's nothing to be afraid of. So he likes Vrindavan, where the awe and majesty is lost, forgotten by another potency, his internal Yogamaya potency. So it's just freedom of varieties of loving exchange. That's Krishna. No, he has the other features too. The omniscient feature.
Thank you.
Guru Maharaj, going back to your explanation on Draupadi's pastime, you were sharing that she was looking to her husband and then
different shelters.
Yeah, so when I read the pastime and hear the pastime, these were devotees of Krishna who she was looking to, the devotees of Krishna.
Yes.
So when I think in my life, you know, as we are encouraged to work on our relationships with the devotees of Krishna, and they are representing Krishna in our lives.
Yes.
So when we turn to these relationships, how is it different than turning to Krishna directly?
Well, again, she's a pure devotee, and we're not. And so she's performing this pastime for our edification. The edification, trying to keep it simple. The message for you, or the message for us, is yes, we should see the devotees as representatives of Krishna. And don't forget the Krishna part, that they're who they're representing. It's actually Krishna that we're taking shelter of when we take shelter of the devotees. It's a relationship with Krishna that's being restored, re-excavated, renovated, whatever, through the relationship with the devotees. Let us not forget that. Yeah, that's they're the instrument, but the instrument is being wielded by a person. It's like this question of who is the deliverer? It's Krishna that's the deliverer. There's representatives of Krishna that are the representatives, the instruments of Krishna, but Krishna is the deliverer. So it doesn't mean the instrument is, you know, take it or leave it. That's impersonalism. The instrument is seen as good as Krishna because it's the instrument through which Krishna is acting. But it's Krishna's acting. So no, Draupadi is performing a pastime for our edification. She's not, you know, forgetful. But it's a pastime. So it's not wrong of her to have turned to her husbands or to Bhishma, etc. And even hold on to her sari. There's nothing wrong with her having done that. But Krishna wanted to bring her to the brink of I am the only shelter. No. Should her husbands or could her husbands have done something and others in the assembly? Certainly. But it was a pastime to help us learn something. When we take shelter of, you get it, others who are instruments of Krishna, it's Krishna. He's the deliverer.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your very, very beautiful class. It was very interesting when you mentioned that the reason why a devotee experiences ecstasy is because Krishna is experiencing ecstasy.
That's a nice understanding, isn't it?
Yes, yes, Maharaj. I never heard that before. It was very nice, encouraging.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking that there are so many instances when we experience ecstasy in doing service, and there are many instances when we do not. So is there an element of how we are not able to remember Krishna in that service, or we are not able to remember enough, or with that much of intensity that we are not experiencing ecstasy in our service? So I just want to have a little understanding on that.
I'm not sure what the question is. Can we turn the light on, Sibal? Oh, you mean these lights here? I'm not sure what the question is. It's easy to talk. I can say something, but I'm not sure what you're...
I can ask again. I mean to ask that, why are we not able to experience ecstasy sometimes in doing
ecstasy
service?
Ecstasy is the word?
Ecstasy, yes.
Ecstasy.
Yes.
Well, that's in Krishna's hand.
So we should think that the service is not pleasing to Krishna, that is why...
No. We shouldn't think that.
So because sometimes it happens that we feel ecstasy, it means Krishna is feeling ecstasy, it means he is happy with our service, but sometimes we do not feel ecstasy. It means our service is not pleasing to him.
No. There's variegatedness in feelings. And we shouldn't interpret, let's say there's a very strong, maybe even an overwhelming feeling of humility. That's another ecstasy. It's different. My service is inadequate, and we're feeling that feeling strongly. And we may not interpret that as ecstasy, but it's an ecstasy. I want to say something more, but then Jamuna Jivana. But take the microphone. I learned a lot of things. And one of the things that I learned during the Ayodhya Yatra was this repeated use of the phrase in Valmiki Ramayana, the sadness of everybody. And, you know, so many people were feeling sad, and even Dasarath gave up his life out of sadness, and sad. It was so sad. So it's like, I don't want to stop hearing about this. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, that's a secondary rasa. Prabhupada touches on it in Nectar Devotion, but it's a secondary sthai bhav, where it stimulates ecstatic love. Although it doesn't look ecstatic at all. How sad were they? Weeping and sorrow is the word, actually, sorrow. And it's a sthayi bhav. It stimulates the primary rasa. So we're not very mature devotees, and what is ecstasy when is Krishna pleased by some service or not? You know, we have to take a different textbook than the mind. And, you know, I feel something. It feels happiness. Okay. Yeah.
So you said that it is enlivening and important to recognize the reciprocation of Krishna. And that was a theme of one of the themes of the class.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I've been thinking about the last few days, actually. You know, compared to the beginning of when we started Krishna consciousness, how we saw Krishna's reciprocation is slightly different than how we're seeing it today.
Sure.
And the tendency is to see Krishna's reciprocation as perhaps, oh, he's relieved my suffering in some way or the other. Oh, I got this particular suffering has been taken away. Oh, Krishna's mercy. My question, and then something else that we read in Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada's explaining Chaturvarnya Manashishtam, where the four motivations are to approach Krishna. Prabhupada explains the person approaches Krishna praying for something material, and Krishna gives it sometimes, but he gives it so that it can improve one's or increase one's appreciation for Krishna and perhaps lead them towards pure devotion at some point. My question is, how would you recommend we train ourselves to refine seeing Krishna's reciprocation in our lives so that we can head towards this platform of pure devotion?
How can we refine our understanding of Krishna's reciprocation with us so that we can move on the path of pure devotion? Well, there's a number of things. And starting with chanting without offense and reading Prabhupada's books carefully and regularly and associating with devotees who are contemplating these subjects carefully. And another is monitoring the mind. There's one devotee, withhold the devotee's name, but I'm really amazed, impressed, astonished at the degree to which this particular devotee is monitoring their mind. Their phrase is an ongoing series of refinements, of realigning the mind towards pure devotion. They're not obsessed with where there's deviation, but because they're practiced at it, as soon as a deviation comes, they detect it, and they quickly move back. And again and again and again, this continuous series of refinements, of redirection of the mind. Very conscientious introspection. But, you know, it's not the horse is before the cart. The bhakti, wanting to please Krishna, is the intention. And they've been with it for several years. And every day for several years is that refinement. They're really serious about coming to the stage. But, you know, the application element of the principle they're pursuing. It's astounding. And it's perceivable how they're advancing towards the goal because of that. They're not particularly, you know, a reader. They chant, but they're not particularly, you know, an astounding chanter. But, you know, anyway, any one of these and combination of these. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the most important element is the commitment or the determination to come to that stage of pure devotion or, you know, free from offenses. Because without that, the rest is kind of mechanical. The full effect isn't going to be experienced. We can be with the devotees, we can do reading, we can, you know, do things. But it's the sincere intention to come to that stage where unmixed devotion is something that we live by. Commitment. And something that certainly helps that commitment is the commitment to the person or persons who are encouraging us and have given us that gift for their pleasure, their bhakti principle. Not just on our effort to do any one of those above things. It's magical. Because then Krishna is pleased and Krishna lifts one. In ways that are hard to understand, you know, navigate, you know, wouldn't have been our